Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Righteous Talk on Love and Relationships with your host, me, Derek Q. Sanders. I paused for a second because I was waiting on my intro music to start. And for some reason, we haven't gotten it to play, but we'll work that out next week or whenever. We'll roll without it. That's how we do. But again, thank you for tuning in tonight for Righteous Talk on Love and Relationships. As usual, let me start my show off by letting you know where you can find me. You can find me on social media, on Facebook at facebook.com/ Derek Q. Sanders. That's DereqQ Sanders. You can find me on Twitter at Derek Q. Sanders. Again, DereqQ Sanders. You can find me on my website. My website is www.derekqsanders.com. Q Sanders, that's DereqQ Sanders.com. Where else am I on social media? My public figure page, that's facebook.com/ righteous men, just like this show. That's WRITEOUS, righteous men. That's where you can find me. You can also find me at Black and Married with Kids. I am a staff writer for the website blackandmarriedwithkids.com, the most popular website for black married couples. I write in the single section. And my last article came out not this past Monday, which was yesterday, but a week ago, Monday, my next article will be out this coming Monday. And it should be interesting. Actually, the article I'm actually writing about, oddly enough and interestingly enough, writing about players, and is actually inspired by a radio interview I did recently. Someone invited me on their show, and it kind of stemmed from some interaction with one of the guys on the show. Well, I shouldn't say one of the guys, there's only one guy on the show, but just some things I observed from the show. So I'm not quite sure what the title would be, but it'll be about players, or just that particular role, the role of men who put on a certain persona, and why men play that particular role. So it should be pretty interesting. The last article, the most recent one that came out, was on how not to cheat on your girl. That came from, I think I may have mentioned that last week's show, but that came from my trip to Kroger about a week ago, a couple weeks ago. Made a trip to Kroger to get something to drink while I sat down to do some writing. And it came from, it was inspired by my trip to the store. So it was called How Not to Cheat on Your Girl. Pretty interesting article. So, but that's what's going on with me. That's what I'm working on. Let me also plug my book. My most recent book is called Righteous Talk, is the name of the show. My most recent book is called Outdated, Rethinking How Men Date Women. Again, that's Outdated, Rethinking How Men Date Women. That book can be found at my website, www.derekqsanders.com. It can also be found at Amazon if you search for the name, but it can be found on my website on the product page. And I just deal with just a whole idea of dating, how we date, and just rethinking the whole paradigm of dating. As kind of a bonus, at the back of the book, I put 10 probing questions that women should ask men that men that want to date them. Not only do I give you some probing questions to ask men, but I also give you the rationale or what you're looking for in his response to those questions. One of the questions is, out of all the women that he could have chose to approach, why you? And that's a question a woman should want to know. You're out and about somewhere. Let's say you're out at a cafe having lunch, and a gentleman approaches you, and there are other women in the room that are equally as attractive or whatever. There are other women there. And out of all the women there, he decided to approach you. He decided to build the courage to walk across the room and try to initiate an instant rapport with you for some particular reason, not knowing whether you'd be interested in or not, not knowing whether he would crash or burn, any of that. But he decided to take the chance and come talk to you. And as a woman, you should want to know, what was it about you that caused him to want to approach you? For one, he didn't know you from Adam. So it had to be something that he saw, because if he didn't know you, then the only thing that could have triggered his interest must have been what he saw. So you want to know, what was it? What was it about you that he saw that caused him to want to approach you and try to initiate contact and gain your interest? So you want to know, that's just one, but there's actually 10 others. I said it was 10 questions. It was actually 11. I gave you a bonus one. So check that out. But tonight, what we want to talk about tonight, I was kind of deliberating and thinking about what I wanted to talk about and thinking about the name that we would give this particular show. And what I decided to title the show, I guess this is my title, maybe it's my working title, but what I wanted to talk about, I'm actually going to play a clip tonight. I'm going to play a clip from a TED Talk that I watched a while back, at least probably a year ago, somewhere around there, and it's called The Sexy Lie by Carolyn Hellman, I believe her name is. But tonight's show, that's what we want to talk about. We want to talk about sexy, about being sexy. And a question that came to mind when I was thinking about the show was, do women have value outside of a sexual context? And let me actually read to you my post on Facebook, because I didn't tell you that too. The reason why I gave you my social media information, where to find me. For those of you who don't know, those of you who are listening, most of you probably know, because that's probably how you found out about the show on Facebook. But each day I post an original quote having to do with love and relationships. And today what I posted was, I'll read it to you. Even shattered glass is capable of casting a beautiful reflection given the right subject to image. Virtue stands alone. Sexy will always win a great measure of attention. It captures the eye of the beholder with reckless abandonment. Virtue is beauty that even the blind can see clearly, transcendent of the limits of the physical with eternal appeal. And as a hashtag, I wrote Cult of Sexiness. And let me do something that I don't get a chance to do when I'm writing on Facebook. I don't get a chance to explain what my post means. Because sometimes, I mean, it's fairly easy to understand. Other times I may have an idea that may not be as easily understood just in the writing itself. But in this one, when I said even shattered glass is capable of casting a beautiful reflection, the whole post, I'm contrasting sexy with virtue. And in our culture, sexy is like a premium. It's a goal. Not only is it a goal, it is gold. It's a goal, G-O-A-L, and it's gold, G-O-L-D, if you find it or if you become that. But in the post, I was doing a contrast between virtue and being sexy. And that's what I'm saying. Even shattered glass is capable of casting a beautiful reflection. Broken glass will cast a beautiful reflection, provided it has the right subject. So even glass will reflect somebody's pretty face. Big deal. But virtue stands alone. And the difference between the two is broken glass is casting, it's only casting a reflection. So it's just showing what it sees. But virtue is something that's deeper. You know, you can make yourself look sexy in what you wear. You know, that's something that can be fabricated. You can't fabricate virtue. And, you know, the next paragraph says, sexy will always win a great measure of attention. And it will. If you're sexy, people will look. You get attention. Men will look. The whole nine. Simple. Easy. Because it captures the eye of the beholder with reckless abandonment. So it'll get attention, definitely, always. Virtue is beauty that even the blind can see clearly. What that means is virtue is something that does not have to be held, or you don't have to behold that. You don't have to see that with your eyes. It's something that is apparent even without looking at it with the naked eye. It's transcendent of the limits of the physical. It has eternal appeal. So it's something far, far better. It reminds me of Proverbs 31 and 30, I believe it is. It says that beauty is vain. Now, that's within context because clearly the scripture does talk about beauty. There's nothing wrong with beauty, but it's just talking about it by contrast. Because the scripture talks about Absalom being, and it's a man, Absalom, being beautiful from the crown of his head to the sole of his feet, said there was no blemish in him. So the scripture does talk about beauty. It doesn't talk about beauty in a negative light, but it's saying here that beauty is vain. And especially in a culture like ours, beauty becomes vain because it becomes the most important thing. We all appreciate something that is beautiful, something that's good to look at. Everyone appreciates that. Everyone, we all have an appreciation for that, whether it's a person, whether it's a thing. But in our culture, it becomes the only thing. It becomes the most important thing. And then when it comes to sexy, that's even a different context altogether. Because the difference between beauty and sexy, when something is beautiful, it's something that is attractive. It's something that's good to look at. It's something that you can look at and you can appreciate its appearance. But when you talk about sexy, it's something different because something can be beautiful and not have any sexual context to it at all. You just, you know, like a work of art, you look at it and you can appreciate the art that went into creating something that's beautiful to look at, like the Mona Lisa, which I don't see what's beautiful about Mona Lisa. She's not attractive to me at all, but just using that as an example, you look at a work of art, something painted by Claude Monet or Picasso or someone else, one of the other famous artists. It's something that you look at and you, let me use somebody else, Joshua Rayner, my friend Penny's son. I look at some of his art, his paintings on Facebook, and he's a very talented painter. very talented artist, and you're able to look at his work and you appreciate that work. You see the talent, you know, his craft, the perfection of his skill, and you look at it and you say, that's beautiful. But there's no sexual context. When you talk about sexy, now you're talking about something that has an appeal, a sexual appeal, something that's inviting, something that's desirous. And I'm getting into my writing now because I was writing about it, but I'll mention it anyway. Maybe I'll read when I wrote as needed or whatever. But when you start, when you talk about sexy, the interesting thing is often people talk about sexy and they talk about sexy as though it's a word that has nothing to do with sex itself, even though the word sexy, the root of that word is sex. So you can't divorce the root from the actual word. It's sex with Y on the end. And the Y describes what sexy is. If that makes sense, maybe it doesn't. But it has it's uniquely tied to sex. So when you look at something, you say it's sexy, you're saying something is desirous. It is appealing for the purpose of sex. And in our culture, that becomes women. And I was sitting down, I was thinking about this, and I was just writing some notes. And I'll read those and talk about those, and then I'll get into the clip shortly. The TED Talk is actually, as I said earlier, called "The Sexy Lie," that goes into actually all of this stuff that I'm talking about, and some. But the thing I thought about being and or becoming sexy has become a most coveted designation, a goal, an achievement. But what is its true value? What's the true value of being sexy? What real value is there in finding yourself high on someone's hit list? And by hit list, I do mean that as a euphemism for sex. Now, some people say, well, just because you're saying something is sexy doesn't mean that it has anything to do with sex. But as I was just mentioning, you can't divorce one from the other. That's like saying that food is tasty, but that doesn't have anything to do with taste. Well, it does. It does, because that's the root of the word. Tasty, it has to do with what it tastes like. You can't, that's the root, the basis of the word. And it's the same thing with sexy. Even though the word is used, we have a tendency to redefine words. No, you. That word already has a definition, and it's a static definition, So to use it otherwise out of that particular context is to redefine it. But it already has a definition, and here's what the definition is: sexy. It's an adjective, sexually attractive or exciting, as in sexy French underwear. Synonyms are sexually attractive, seductive, desirable, alluring, toothsome, never heard that one, sensual, sultry, slinky, provocative, tempting, tantalizing, etc. Sexually aroused, synonyms are aroused, sexually excited, amorous, lustful, passionate, etc. Okay. So, as I was saying, people have the tendency to redefine words, to sanitize words that may not represent them well. So, when you start talking about sexy and then you start talking about the connotation and the connection to that and sex, then it's like, oh, no, I don't mean it in that way. Well, that's what the word means. And if that's not what's meant, then it should be another word should be chosen. But you think about it, when we say something is sexy, usually when you look at it, it is alluring, it is tempting, it is tantalizing, it is presented in a manner that does suggest sex. When you see a woman that's dressed or that is dressed in a manner that's considered sexy, it usually is inviting. It's usually inviting. It's usually something that is appealing in a sexual context. Or a man, whatever. But in case we're talking about women. The other thing I was thinking about, I was actually watching and reading some other things as I was preparing for this this episode. And one of them was talking about the difference between being sexually and, well, it mentioned being sexually empowered, contrasting with being objectified. And the difference between being sexually empowered and objectified is apparently, from what I witnessed, determined by who's responsible for the female subject's representation. If the woman is in control of her images or her image, she is sexually empowered. If a man is in control of her image, she is being objectified. And by that, I mean, if it's a woman on a shoot, she's on a photo shoot, and there's a man in control, he's the one directing everything, the whole nine, then she's being objectified if she's presented as a sex object, from what I witnessed from this video I was watching. But if it's actually a man, I'm sorry, if it's actually a woman herself and she's doing this, or actually, let's just say it's a woman, she's posting some photos on social media. Let's say it's Kim Kardashian. Then she's considered to be sexually empowered. Does that make sense to anyone? To participate in one's own objectification is not sexual empowerment. It's symptomatic of a greater problem. The act itself is called self-objectification. So still objectification, she's doing it herself. The fact that a woman willfully participates in her own degradation only shows that she has been socialized to see herself through the same lens as a male who views her physical appeal as her most valuable asset and or feature. So even though it's a woman doing this herself, it's just symptomatic of a greater issue, that she's been socialized to view herself or value herself by her ability to appeal to men sexually. And that's not to say anything about women, to down women or anything like that. Excuse me, it's actually the opposite. It's to look at women and see a value that's much greater than how she appeals to a man sexually or physically. Because women have far greater value than that. And don't hear me saying that there's something wrong with a woman being physically attractive. It's not. There's nothing wrong with a woman being physically attractive at all. It's almost a difference between, if I can tie these two together, I was looking at pictures, and you see a lot of them, of women on this social media where they're showing these pictures of women breastfeeding their children. And they're saying, oh, this is beautiful, this is natural. And I agree, it is beautiful, it is natural. But I was also thinking of this. A man and woman having sex, a husband and wife having sex, is also beautiful. It's also natural. But when it's seen, if we were to see that on social media, it would be called pornography. And it would be a perversion of that which is actually beautiful, because the act between a husband and wife is beautiful. It's very beautiful. God intended that. God designed that. God gave us the nerve endings so that we do enjoy it. He intended that. And it is beautiful. But taken out of that proper context, it goes from something beautiful to something perverted. And it goes from being just a beautiful sight, a beautiful engagement between a man and a woman, a husband and a wife, to a perversion, to pornography. The same thing is true of a woman who's breastfeeding her child, and you're looking at her breasts. Yeah, that's beautiful, but it's not something that needs to be paraded in public to prove what? Because the argument is not, when I see that, the argument is not that that's not beautiful. Of course it's beautiful. God has designed a woman's body to, for her to lactate, to nourish her child. That's beautiful. That's the handiwork of God. But it's not something that I need to see or we need to see in pictures. It doesn't serve a purpose. It's like having a bowel movement. That's natural, and it's beneficial. It's useful. But that's not something we need to see a public display of. And the same thing with a woman. A woman is beautiful, but when it's taken out of its context and that becomes the most beneficial part of her, then she becomes an object because her beauty is taken out of context. Sex is taken out of context, and now she becomes just an object. She becomes a means to an end, and that's not her design. All right? Before we go to the clip, let me play this commercial, and let's see if this, try this, see if this works. This is a commercial for my book, Outdated, Rethinking How Men Date Women. Here we go.
If you're totally frustrated with the world of dating and want to finally have the relationship you know God wants you to have, then you should read a brand new book, Outdated, Rethinking How Men Date Women by famed relationship coach Derek Q. Sanders. Derek is well known as the pro-activist coach who doesn't pit men and women against each other, as is popular in network and broadcast media to ramp up ratings, but produces no solutions. Rather, he seeks to achieve harmony in what God ordained as the sacred institution of marriage for his children, the human family. In Derek's book, he shows you what to listen for and what the proper answer should be. Coming from a perspective of a God-fearing moral code, Derek speaks to women who don't want to be mistreated by men who are nowhere near being equally yoked. Therefore, Derek shows you how to have the courage and tenacity to stand up for what you value most highly, so that you can avoid the suffering that you would otherwise get set up for. Derek believes, and you might too, that casual dating is an oxymoron. There is nothing casual about opening yourself up to being loved and potentially hurt by exposing your emotions to a man you're establishing trust in. It's a willful act of vulnerability for a greater purpose than what would or should ever be called casual, and therefore must be treated accordingly. Don't sell yourself short. Falling for a man who isn't worth falling for is really setting yourself up for a fall. Read Derek's book today. You'll be amazed at the strength, comfort, and peace of mind you get from it. Purchase your copy at www.derekqsanders.com on the products page.
There you have it, folks. That was my commercial for my most recent book, Outdated, Rethinking How Men Date Women. Hopefully you heard that clearly, because I uploaded it today and I couldn't check to see if the volume was good or not. It sounded good from what I'm hearing. It sounded good to me hearing it on this end, but I was system wouldn't allow me. Blog Talk is a little tricky. It wouldn't allow me to listen to preview it to see if the volume was good or not. But you can find that, as I said earlier, as you heard on the commercial, you can find the book Outdated, Rethinking How Men Date Women on my website, www.derekqsanders.com. On my products page, you could also find it on my author page on Amazon. So you can either go to my website, and there's a link that'll take you right to Amazon to purchase it. And it's like less than $10. And you can also just go directly to Amazon and do a search and find it. And if you should buy the book, please leave a review on Amazon. That'll help me out if you leave a review. My girlfriend says my commercial sounds scratchy. Okay, we'll have to work on that. Hopefully, this clip won't sound scratchy. The clip, again, is from a TED Talk called The Sexy Lie. It's very good. It's only 12 minutes, so listen to the whole thing. And then we'll do a little commentary on the other side of it after we listen to the TED Talk. Again, it's called The Sexy Lie, where, well, you know what, just listen. It's what we're talking about on the show. Here we go.
Good afternoon. Are we having a transformative afternoon so far? Cheers. Well, I am here today to talk about a lie, in specific, a sexy lie. I know there are lots of lies. Some of them are sexy. Some of them are very unsexy. But I'd like to talk specifically about the lie or the idea that being a sex object is empowering. And I'd like to convince you that it is not empowering. First, by talking about what sexual objectification is, and then moving on to theoretical and data-driven analysis of why it's damaging, and lastly, provide you a plan of action so that you can both navigate objectification culture and change objectification culture. So let's jump right in. What is sexual objectification? It's the process of representing or treating a person like a sex object, one that serves another sexual pleasure. And what's so interesting about sexual objectification is we used to have a vocabulary for it. In the 60s and 70s, we were concerned about sexual objectification and its harm on girls and women. In the 80s, 90s, and today, we've actually been relatively quiet when it comes to public discourse. And so even though our sexual objectification culture is more amplified, we see more images, and 96% of them are female of sexually objectified bodies, we don't have a vocabulary to talk about it. And in fact, young people, I think, have even mostly lost the ability to identify it. As a friend of mine said, it's like being raised in a red room, pulled out of that red room, and asked to describe the color red. So I built on the work of others, and I put together a sex object test. And if the answer is yes to any of these seven questions, then you are looking at a sexually objectifying image. First, does the image show only parts of a sexualized person's body? In other words, does a part stand in for the whole? This woman's derriere, for example, in this advertisement. Does the image present a sexualized person as a stand-in for an object? In this image, a woman becomes a table. Does the image show a sexualized person as interchangeable, that is, as one of many items that can just be swapped out? Does the image affirm the idea of violating the bodily integrity of a sexualized person and that person can't consent? In other words, is that person being acted upon as though she is a sexual object? Does the image suggest that the sexual availability of the person is the defining characteristic of that person? And the text for this ad reads, "You know you're not her first, but do you really care?" And it's being used to sell pre-owned vehicles. Does the image show a sexualized person as a commodity, something that can be bought and sold? In this advertisement, you see women in a vending machine and a man is choosing a woman, and this is to sell men's shoes. And lastly, does the image treat a sexualized person's body as a canvas? And I'm not talking about inking or tattooing that a person decides, but rather marketers using the body as a specific type of canvas. New objectification culture has emerged in the past 10 years, and it's marked by two things. One is an increase in the number of sexually objectifying ads in television, movies, video games, music videos, magazines, and other mediums. And the second advertising component is that the images have become more extreme, more hypersexualized. So why are we experiencing this now? It can really be boiled down to technology. New technology has increase the sheer number of images that you are exposed to every day. So in the 70s, we saw about 500 ads a day. Now we see about 5,000 ads a day. And children, those ages 8 to 18, are spending an average of 8 hours a day hooked up to devices where advertisers can reach them. So what do advertisers do? They cut through the clutter with increased emphasis on violence, hyperviolence, and hypersexualization. So how is this not empowering? I want to make an appeal first to logic. When we're talking about sex objects, we're talking about dichotomies, right? We, in Western thinking, we think of black and white, yes, no, two kind of opposing categories. When we're thinking about sex objects, we're thinking about the object-subject dichotomy. Subjects act, objects are acted upon. So even if you become the perfect object, the perfect sex object, you are perfectly subordinate because that position will always be acted on. So there's not power in being a sex object when you think about it logically. But beyond that, this idea that sex sells, I'd like to challenge that directly, because the fact is, if sex sold, most women are heterosexual, and we are sexual beings, so why wouldn't we see half-naked men everywhere in advertising? I would like to propose that something else is being sold here. To men, they're being sold this idea constantly that they are sexual subjects. They are in the driver's seat. It makes them feel powerful to see images of objectified women everywhere. And for women, we are being sold this idea that this is how we get our value and this is the way to become the ideal sex object, which is why instead of sex selling, these ideas of subjectivity and objectivity are being sold. So we see men's magazines with scantily clad women, and we see women's magazines with scantily clad women. Moving now to the research. Self-objectification is a phenomenon where we, girls and women, view our bodies as sex objects. And all of us do to a greater or lesser extent, and this varies somewhat by sexuality and somewhat by ethnicity, but by and large, all women face this in the U.S. So, self-objectification, 10 years of research, mostly done by psychologists, we know that it has some pretty severe effects. I'm going to run through the list, but I want to concentrate on just a few of these items. First, the more we think of ourselves and internalize this idea of being sex objects, the higher our rates of depression. We also engage in habitual body monitoring much more when we view ourselves as sex objects. What is habitual body monitoring? The men in the audience, this might be news to you. It is not news to the women in the audience. We think about the positioning of our legs, the positioning of our hair, where the light is falling, who's looking at us, who's not looking at us. In fact, in the 5 minutes that I've been giving this talk, on average, the women in this audience have engaged in habitual body monitoring 10 times. That is every 30 seconds. Eating disorders are much more prevalent with those who see themselves as sex objects, as well as body shame, and depressed cognitive functioning. If we're engaging in habitual body monitoring, it simply takes up more mental space that could be better used, completing math tests, completing your homework. It just sucks our cognitive functioning. Also, sexual dysfunction. So this idea that sex sells, isn't it strange that if you think of yourself as a sex object and we're raised in a society that raises little girls to view their bodies as projects to work on and be sex objects, that it actually gets in the way of good sex? So what tends to happen is that women who are high self-objectifiers actually engage in what's called spectatoring during sex acts. So instead of being involved and engaged in the pleasure and what's happening, you tend to view yourself from a third-party perspective, a spectator's perspective, where you're worried about a rolls of fat hanging out, what that leg looks like. So again, it gets in the way of sexual pleasure. So if there's anything I can pitch to you about why you don't want to live in a culture that sexually objectifies, it diminishes your sexual pleasure. It also lowers self-esteem, it lowers GPAs, and it's not negligible. The difference that I found in my research is the difference between going to graduate school and not going to graduate school for college women. It also lowers political efficacy or the belief that you have a voice in politics, and it lowers your ability to get along with other women. We engage in female competition. We see male attention as the holy grail of our existence by and large, and so we compete with other women for our own self-esteem because we see it as this finite resource this cherished finite resource. So we go into parties and we know where we are in the pretty girl pecking order, and when another woman is valued for being a sex object, it actually makes us feel bad about ourselves. So what can we do about this? Plan of action. First, I'd like to propose some personal actions. Because what sexual objectification does is actually set up a sexy ceiling that damages women or harms them personally, politically, and professionally. I want to focus on the personal here. What can we do? We can stop consuming damaging materials, girls, women, because we know within the first 3 minutes that our self-esteem goes down when we're looking at fashion magazines. We can stop competing with other girls and women. When we see a woman who is getting attention for this, we can understand that she is part of a system where the rules are stacked against us. She is not a problem, she is a symptom of a problem. And we can stop seeking attention for our bodies. We raise our little boys to view their bodies as tools to master their environments. We raise our little girls to view their bodies as projects to constantly be improved. What if women started to view their bodies as tools to master their environment, as tools to get you from one place to the next, as these amazing vehicles for moving through the world in a new way? And for boys, be a supportive ally. Understand what's happening around you, what's going on in the minds of the women around you. Don't evaluate girls and women based upon how they look. Evaluate them for what they say and what they do. And finally, use your position of privilege strategically to speak out against objectification. So moving beyond the personal to the political, you can boycott, you can simply refuse to consume materials that sexually objectify girls and women. You can contact media producers when something is offensive to you. You can produce your own media. Get behind the camera. Write. Act. Direct. And you can also engage in new media activism. There's an incredible world at your disposal to bring about political change, and I want to provide just a few examples. First, Sociological Images, a blog run by Dr. Lisa Wade, worked with students to pull Abercrombie & Fitch's padded bras or padded swimsuits for toddlers. And they ran a campaign where they blogged about it. It got some press coverage. There were some petitions, and they pulled the product nationally from their stores. This is my hero. Her name is Julia. She's a 14-year-old who got change.org to put a petition together, 85,000 signatures. And she went to New York, and 17 Magazine agreed that they would not Photoshop any of their models from here on out. So, lastly, I'll leave you with this idea of imagining a different world. I'd like you to imagine a world where girls and women don't spend an hour every morning putting on their makeup and doing their hair. I'd like you to imagine a world where women are valued for what they say and what they do rather than the way they look. I would like you to imagine a world where instead of spending time on dress and appearance, we actually directed our energies to dealing with serious problems like human trafficking, sexualized violence, homophobia, poverty, hunger. And lastly, because you are the architects of your future, I would like to remind you that sometimes architects have to demolish paradigms in order to build a better world. So my question for you is, what better world will you build? Thank you.
All right, there you have it. The Sexy Lie by Carolyn, I believe it's Carolyn Hellman. You can find that if you care to see it. I wish you could actually see the video. There's a few things you missed. She has some images that she showed. She also, the one part at the end, she was saying, imagine, she was taking her makeup off, and she was saying, imagine a world basically where, you know, a woman didn't have to present herself in this particular manner. Very, very good TED Talk. Very good TED Talk. I saw that, as I said, maybe a year ago or so. But I want to just focus in on some of the things that she said in these last few minutes, that the effects, the negative effects that this has on a woman, this whole thing of having to conform to a certain image or having to be sexually objectified, having to be viewed in that particular lens, that particular context, One of the things she said is depression. It causes, you women, you ladies, to be depressed because you're measuring yourself against other women. And in some cases, you're measuring yourself against women who are photoshopped in magazines who themselves don't even look like these images because they've been photoshopped and they've... their complexion is made to look flawless. They've taken off pounds where they wanted to reduce pounds. They've added some stuff where they wanted to add some stuff. Where these women don't, where they're not, where the models themselves, if you saw them in life, they don't even look like this. The other thing is it causes body monitoring, where you're over concerned with, you're monitoring your body parts. All this kind of stuff, stuff that men don't have to deal with. We don't have to deal with that kind of stuff because we're not measured by that particular standard. We're not measured by that. It lowers self-esteem. So this stuff causes you all to have low self-esteem. And a lot of that is by design. You guys are marketed that way. You're reminded of your flaws so that the beauty industry, these various product companies can sell you their products. They can sell you hair products, but they first have to tell you, have to convince you that there's something wrong with your hair. So they can sell you color, wigs, weave, and all these different things. But they have to first show you that there's something wrong with your hair. They sell you makeup because they show you there's something wrong with your skin. All of these different things. It lowers your ability to get along with other women because they're your competition. I've heard women say when they talk about dressing in ways that they may not even want to dress, where they're dressing in revealing ways because they have to compete with other women because they're saying while they're out, men notice those women who are half-dressed. And that's true. Men do notice them. Some of us, well, I shouldn't say some of us, all of us notice those women. Now, what that means is entirely different depending on what man you're talking about. I notice women that are half naked like anybody else. I'm not interested in dating them. I'm not interested in marrying one of them. I'm not interested in my girlfriend looking like that. And neither are my buddies who are husbands or who are boyfriends, who are fiancés. They're not interested in their women being half naked out either. So yeah, it causes women to have other issues getting along with other women because again, it becomes a competition. I want to key in on some of the things she said for the plan of action. Stop consuming damaging material. One of my good buddies, my buddy Kalen, and maybe I shouldn't have said his name, but that's okay. But my buddy Kalen says that it's like he hates it when his wife looks at Cosmo magazine, Cosmopolitan magazine or some of these other magazines, because you have these articles that are telling women, these articles where they're writing stuff that this outlandish stuff where women are made to feel insecure about what they're reading because the articles are telling them where they don't measure up, how to please your man. 31 different ways on how to please your man. All of this crazy stuff where, women would be surprised if you heard some of the conversations that men are having. We're not having conversations about you all's hair. We're not having conversation about you all's makeup. We're having conversation about other more substantial things, things with more value than that. That's not the conversation. There are guys having those types of conversations, and those are the ones that I'm usually warning you all to stay clear of. The other plan of action, yes, stay away from consuming these damaging material. I left this part out because it lowers your self-esteem within 3 minutes. Within 3 minutes of you looking at this these magazines, it begins to lower your self-esteem within 3 minutes because you're measuring yourself by what you're looking at. How big is this woman's behind? Is yours that big? Because this is what men want. This is what you're led to believe by what you're seeing in the magazine. Um, Can you read my own? Stop seeking attention for your body. Stop seeking attention for that. And I see this all the time. I mean, I jokingly say that when I'm out and about on a daily basis, I see more rump, I see more booty than a proctologist. And excuse me for using that term. There are worse terms I could use, but I won't. But I see more butt than a proctologist on a daily basis, because women have been, and I'm not saying this to be disparaging to women. I'm not. I'm saying this because I love women and I honor women. And I don't like to see women objectified, but women have been socialized, convinced that this is their primary value. You see it in the clothing that are made and that are sold to women. You know, I'm out and I'm thinking, why is it if a woman is working out, she has to be half naked, or every crevice, every body part has to be shown? Whereas a man, he's got on, you know, some baggy pants, some baggy sweats, or some big baggy shorts, and he's getting the same workout that she's getting. Why does a woman have to show her body? Why does she have to be revealing her body parts in order to work out, and a man doesn't? The other thing, the other plan of action, evaluate women, and this one was to men, evaluate women for what they say, not what they look like. How many times have you heard that? You don't. Where a woman is to be evaluated or valued for what she says, not for how she looks. And yes, it does have value. It does. I mean, it has value how someone looks. Because if you don't know a person, what's immediately accessible is how they look, whether that be male or female. That's all you have. But that should not be the most important thing. And a woman should not be made to feel that way. She should be valued for what she says, not for how she looks, because what she says tells us who she is. It's how she looks. I mean, that'll change. Actually, that'll change from one time you see her to the next time. Her hair might be different, whatever, or as she ages. But when you hear what she says, you hear who she is. The words tell us who a person is, because it contains that person's ideas, that person's thoughts, that person's dreams, that person's fears, that person's passion. It tells us who that person is. How they look is just really a matter of what appeals to us. You know, you see somebody, you find them attractive, that means that they meet a certain standard of beauty that you have. You don't find them attractive, that means they don't fit a certain standard of beauty. So that has its more to do with you and what you like than it does the actual person. But when a person talks, that has everything to do with who they are. And we get a chance to see who that person is on the inside, which is much more valuable than how they look. And again, I'm not saying that how a person looks is not valuable, does not matter, because it does. It does have value. It doesn't matter. But we don't want to believe the lie, as the talk was titled, the sexy lie, or with my first question. Where's my question at? Hold on 1 second. Oh, I remember. I was looking for my notes. My question was, does a woman have value outside of a sexual context? That was the question that I was, my opening question for my show. And the answer is, of course she does. Of course she does. A woman has intrinsic value, or inherent value, I should say. She is inherently valuable. She is created with value. The very first woman was made perfectly for the first man. She was made fit for his needs, She was made to equally match him. He was not greater than her. She was not less than him. She was made perfectly to meet him, to meet, you know, his exact match. So women were created with value, inherent value. That's beyond what you look like. Unfortunately, we live in a culture where it's lucrative to promote sexy. You know, I say sex sales, sexy sells more. Most of us are not out buying sex, but people are out buying things that present them as being sexy. And it creates all of these issues that we talked about, depression, low self-esteem, low GPA, all of these things. So what we want to take away from here, from this show, is that women have value. You guys have value. And stop consuming materials, television, and all of these things that only present you as a sex object, where it only presents you as having value when you appeal for the purpose of sex because you have much greater value than that. All right? We will be back again next week, same time, same station, 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock Central Standard Time for my friends and family in Detroit and other places on Eastern Standard Time. That'll be 8 o'clock, you guys, time. So please tune in. Subscribe so you get a notice before the a reminder to let you know that the show is coming on. Tell your friends about it. Call in so we can have some actual live dialogue. All right. Thank you, everyone. Have a great night. This is Derek Sanders, Righteous Talk on Love and Relationships. And before I get out of here, please find me on social media. You can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/Derek Q Sanders, D-E-R-E-K, Q Sanders. You can also find me if you'd like to see my post on a meme that I create daily. You can find that on facebook.com/righteousmen. That's W-R-I-T-E-O-U-S, men. And you can find me on my website. I have a blog there, several blogs, articles. You can find me there at www.DerekQSanders. That's D-E-R-E-K-Q-Sanders. And Instagram, DerekQSanders. Twitter, at DerekQSanders. I think that's it. Any show ideas, any of that, you can reach out to me here on Blog Talk. You can leave messages here, or you can leave me an inbox on Facebook. All right. Thank you, everyone. Have a great night.